Hey, what's going on? It's Doug here. I needed to pop in before we get started with this episode for a couple things. Number one, I'm a little bit embarrassed about this one. I pride myself on having high quality audio for the podcast. As an avid listener and viewer on YouTube, I know that audio is so important. The audio is even more important on the video side. It's kind of funny. People can handle poor video or bad lighting, but if the audio's off, it's not cool. So in this episode, and there might be a couple other episodes, which I'll hopefully be able to provide a warning then too, there's some buzzing noise. And unfortunately, in this case, it's on my side. I'm not 100% sure what caused it. It only occurred a couple times here. We've edited several out, and basically it buzzes. It sounds a little annoying, but it goes away pretty quick. It just lasts for a few seconds normally. And shout out to producer Chris for identifying this issue, helping me edit several out, and then leaving in the ones that we didn't want to interfere with the actual content. So we left a couple of those in. Apologies. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. I thought maybe it was because I had a cell phone kind of close by, and maybe notifications were coming in. I'm not 100% sure. I've recorded thousands of hours in the same format with the same microphone and all same things, and we haven't had the issue before. But anyway, somehow I goof things up, and I'm sorry. We're trying to fix it. I'm going to start putting my phone far away. I don't need it next to me. And I mean, in fact, if I'm getting notifications like while I'm interviewing someone, it's actually a little bit distracting, so I don't want that. Anyway, it might happen again. It might be on some previous episodes where it's, you know, minor. It only occurs a couple times, but I will be vigilant on trying to eliminate this. And I even thought about doing like voiceovers to cover up the issues, but I think in this case, we'll just let it fly. It turns out like this episode is with Francis. So Francis is talking, so I couldn't necessarily do voiceovers for that. Otherwise, I think it would sound a little bit awkward. So other thing I want to let you know about, there's a couple. Mint Mobile. All right. If you want to help support the show, basically you can check out Mint Mobile. If you're not already on a discount carrier, Mint is awesome. We switched about 1 year ago. I saved $1,080 in the last year because of the switch. I've had no issues with the service. It's a great company to work with. New customers are eligible for any plan for $15 per month for 3 months. So that's $45. And my wife and I, we have the 5 gigs per month plan and pay $180 annually. So you can go to milehighfi.com/mint to check it out. And here's the other thing. So this is a limited deal. It's active now until January 2nd. And they will give you one free month if you get 2 months of their best-selling 3-month 5-gig plan. So the other plan where it's $45, that's any of the plans. So it goes like lower to a lot more gigs than 5. But if you know you use about 5 gigs per month, then you could check this one out and get 2 months and then get an additional free month there. So you would use code free month, and the details will be in the description in the show notes, so you can go check it out. Again, that's just active until January 2nd, 2025. So if you want to support the show, we're an affiliate, so we get a commission if you do join up. And I'm testing out some different offers to see, you know, what works for people. And I figure may as well offer things that I found really helpful in products that I actually use. So the other thing I want to let you know about is the email list. We haven't talked about it in a while, but if you go to milehighfi.club and join the Mile High Fi Club, then you can get emails. So we had tested this sometime in the past early on, and we would let people know about the shows. And when Carl left the show, it gave me an opportunity to like look at the things that we were doing with the show, look at like what I was working on and things that we, you know, wanted to do and didn't do and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I was like, hey, I like sending these emails every now and then, let you all know about what's going on, episodes that are coming out, episodes that are popular and that sort of thing. So if you want to join the email list, I send about one per week. I think that's a pretty good cadence. not too many. And if you want to join, you can go check it out. Generally, there'll be, hey, this new episode came out. I may put together a little series of like the best of episodes, because I have a lot of data about like which episodes did best and were downloaded the most and that sort of thing. So I could like put those in different sections. And that's just a thought about what I might be putting in some emails, like, hey, back in the archive, this was a great episode. It's evergreen. You could check it out. So check out Mint if you're interested. Sorry about the fucked up audio. And then you can also join the email list if you want to. That's it for now. Let's get to the interview with Francis. And this is the update. So we recorded this just a few weeks ago. And thanks a lot, Francis, for joining me. And we'll get to the episode right now. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. Today, we're getting an update from Francis. And basically, Francis and Peter were on the show about a year and some change ago. I recently republished that episode, so that should be fresh in people's mind. And basically today, we're going to get a full update on the things we talked about. Back in the previous interview, we looked at your financial position, including some thoughts about changing the housing. And your overall goal back then was to set things up for a Coast Fi situation so that you could relax a little bit. We're going to look at your housing situation and get an update on that. We'll talk about your jobs and we'll look at a breakdown of where you are financially. And I appreciate you sharing all the details, because a lot of times people are a little bit nervous to share specific numbers and all that, but we dug into it and we could hear how things are going. Plus, we're going to look at other stuff going on in life, including we'll talk about the budgeting app that you're using and maybe get into the pros and cons of that. So for the people that maybe missed the first episode, can you just give a quick intro on who you are and what you do professionally?
Yep. My name is Francis. I have my own bookkeeping business. My husband, Peter, runs his dad's woodworking company. When we came on the show before, we had just finished paying off our house, but we still had a renter. And so we were getting some rental income, which was a bit of a unique situation. Spoiler, that has changed a bit. And we were also really unsure of where we were at as far as meeting our goals for Coast Fi. We had been renting two rooms. Right before we came on the podcast last year, we went down to renting one room. And at the beginning of October 2024, our roommate moved out and we are officially roommate renter free. It is really amazing. And we are not missing that $825 a month at all. It's just been so different to have like totally our own kitchen space and bathroom space. And I know for most people, that's pretty basic, but we've never had that in this house. And so when we came on the podcast last time, we were really thinking about moving and we were convinced we were going to move. So that's what we spent a lot of time talking about. But actually, over this summer, after about a year of looking at other places, we realized, oh my gosh, the options suck compared to what we have. Like, we'd be paying so much more to get not really everything we're looking for. And now that the renters moved out, we are both decided, like, we are not looking at another house. We're staying here for at least the next few years. And so we're actually making some updates and some changes to the house. So one of the big things is we only have one full bathroom here. And that is the only part of the house that hasn't been updated at all. So we are planning to do that in the spring and do like a $5,000 DIY renovation. We've done the rest of the house ourselves, so we feel confident in doing that. But getting a new shower situation and making the bathroom nice so that we can stay here for a few more years.
Okay. And can you tell us roughly your age? I won't ask you your age directly, but just so people know, because you were doing a house hack situation and I hear that and I'm like, I don't know if I want to have roommates, right? But how old are you guys?
Yeah, I'm 27 and Peter's 31.
Okay. So perfect time to have roommates. Like, you kind of remember what it was like living with roommates in college or something like that. So not a huge deal. But so you had at one point four people for one bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay.
By one point, like, Peter had that for like 10 years and I had that for like 4. Okay. So just going down to one roommate was such an amazing change. And now having no one here, like sharing the bathroom is fabulous.
That's crazy. Any other big improvements from getting rid of the roommates?
We love to cook. So we spend so much time in the kitchen. And so not having anyone else vying for like fridge space, freezer space, kitchen space has been great. And Peter is the number one thing he's looking forward to, which is hilarious, is having both our cars parked in the garage and being able to snow blow without any other cars in the driveway. Because normally we have, you know, multiple obstacles in the driveway to snow blow around. And so that's what he's looking forward to.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. It's like those little conveniences. And I could definitely relate with the kitchen situation. And like, I mean, even if you have like a kitchen where a few people could fit, it's like, it's just crowded and it feels cramped. So you could probably move around easily, get to the fridge, sink, stove, whatever, really fast, right?
Yeah. And it's a small kitchen, but you know, with just the two of us, it's fine. But the addition of having the roommate made it felt so small, which is one of the reasons we had originally thought we wanted to move, was to have more kitchen space. Now, not having a roommate, it turns out, oh, we don't really need that. A little bit of it would be a nice to have, but it's not at all necessary.
And you mentioned about $800 of rental income is now gone. Is that about right?
Yeah, $825 a month.
Okay. Yeah. And it sounds like it's well worth the $825 a month. It's like, this is great from a lifestyle improvement standpoint.
Totally. At this point, I mean, it was so worth it to have the roommates because it allowed us to pay off the house so quickly and to still be investing and doing things we actually enjoyed. But at this point, there's just no real benefit to it.
Okay. So we have the housing situation and we'll go through some of your balance sheet overall. And just curious, so we will go over the details, right? We're still good with actual numbers.
Oh yeah,
here.
Go for it.
Perfect. And the one question, so do you have your bottom line net worth based on the balance sheet? Like you have all the details here, which we could back into, but I can't do addition in my head, so.
No, I do not have that added up somewhere, honestly.
Okay, no worries. Okay, so we'll go through each line and I'll hit sort of the savings area. So you have, when you were on, you had about $86,000 in savings, and we'll go through the breakdown here. But now it's a little bit lower at $85,000. So do you want to go through the details of those couple items there?
Yeah. So after we were on the show last time, we had this goal to bring down our cash position quite a bit. And then when we put this together last week, realized, oh, we haven't done that at all. So we had a future down payment fund, and when we were first on the podcast, that was at $46,000, and then that went up to $85,000, and now we have $40,000 left in there. What we've been doing is just investing $10,000 a month from that once we decided we weren't buying a new house. So we still have $40,000 left, but that will be invested over the next few months. We have an emergency fund of $18,000. And then we have about $20,000 in savings for various other things. Now we have about $26,000. So $20,000 set aside for a car, $4,000 set aside for the bathroom renovation, and then $2,600 set aside for vacations and stuff.
Okay, perfect. A quick question on the dollar cost averaging that you're doing at $10,000 per month. So Many people do dollar cost averaging because it's coming out of their paycheck and they don't have the lump sum. Technically, everyone, this is not financial advice, but technically, if you listen to people, the best returns would be if you just invested it all as soon as possible and just have longer in the market. So the thing is, you might put the $40,000 in and it could drop by like 15% and you would feel bad in your stomach from losing that. But in the long run, it would probably work out okay. So why did you decide to do the dollar cost averaging?
I would have probably just put all of it in the market at once. Honestly, Peter doesn't really feel comfortable with that. He's a little newer to investing, still feels a little gun shy about it, I think. And so we kind of came to the agreement that 10K a month would feel good for both of us. We also weren't sure how much of that we were fully going to invest. And with a potential car situation coming up, I have an audience question later on that, but there's a chance we might not invest that full 40K. So
got it. Okay. And, you know, I like how you handle that. Peter can't defend himself, so you can just blame it on him. Nice.
It's perfect. Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think my wife and I are like sort of similar situation where I'm more likely to just do the lump sum. And she's like, all right, let's stagger it in and do, actually, she literally was doing like the 10K per month kind of thing. So, all right. And you do have a pretty high cash position, like you were mentioning, and you did have a goal to reduce it a little bit. It sounds like you weren't tracking along the way since you ended up roughly at the same spot as where you were.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise. I really thought internally, like, oh, we're doing a good job running a little leaner in the cash. And then we looked at the numbers from a year ago. We're like, no, not at all. I mean, I think in the long run, having the emergency fund of 18K and then having some shorter term savings goals cash on hand is really what we're aiming for. So that's probably going to be like, I don't know, 48,000 on hand is what I see long term. But right now we just are still have a lot of cash lying around doing less than it could.
Got it. Okay. And we'll plant some seeds for people to like give their thoughts. So this is one of them around like the size of your emergency fund and or the amount of cash that you have. So what question do you have to get opinions? And people can leave comments on the YouTube side or send emails or put it in the Facebook group. So Francis, yeah, what kind of feedback do you want around the savings and cash position?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to think what people think of the dollar cost averaging of 10K a month, if they would just do a lump sum or continue to do what we're doing. I feel like the 18,000 emergency fund really works well for our situation. But I am curious what people think about the short-term savings, whether that makes sense or if they prefer to cash flow those sorts of items.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. So I'll put those questions in the show notes. So hopefully, you know, folks go down, check out the questions. There'll be a couple more that we'll ask as well. Now, what about your investments? So back in the last interview, you had about 125K. Where are you at now?
We are at 269K. So huge awesome. Jump in investments over the year. We have been investing about 50% of our net income for the past year.
Great. And of course, in the last year, the market has done pretty well. So that's huge. Is this a surprising number like when you wrote it down?
Yeah, I was shocked to do the comparison. You know, I've logged into Vanguard and stuff, so I kind of knew where we were at balance-wise, but I didn't realize the comparison to last year, both because we've been investing quite a bit more. You know, 50% of income is a lot to be investing consistently. And then also now starting to throw in those past few months, we've been putting that 10K a month in additional to that. And then the market's been doing great. So
congrats. Yeah, it's a big number. I think there's a lot of YouTube videos on this, but like when you hit 100K, the compounding really catches up. And then when you hit higher amounts, like it's just like, wow, these are huge swings sometimes when the market's down. But like when it's up, like it is most of the time, it feels really good to log in there.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, Doug.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like you hit the critical mass and, you know, I think Peter's on board, like investing more, but it's just like, look, if we would have put this, you know, the 40K in all at once, you know, you would have significantly more in there and the returns on top of it. So, okay, but great job overall. Can you tell us what the breakdown is of like the funds that you're investing in? Is it like a simple VTSAX and total bond kind of thing? Maybe a little international?
Yeah, it's pretty much all VTSAX and then some target date funds.
Okay. What target dates did you pick? I know a lot of times those are a little conservative.
Yeah, we chose, I guess it would be when we're 65 or when we're 70. We went a little farther out than they recommend so that it's slightly more aggressive. But that's really, we're putting the pre-tax investments in those.
Okay, got it. Next, let's talk about your income. So previously, you were making $102K as a household. So where are you at now?
$123,000 to $140,000, a little bit of a range there, both because my business income has been kind of steadily growing, so that hasn't totally evened out yet. And we're not entirely sure how that tax situation is going to work out quite yet.
Got it. And you had the additional $800 and whatever dollars per month. So does this new amount reflect the reduction?
Yeah, the new amount reflects the reduction in rent. So even with that loss, we've gone up quite a bit in net income this past year. Part of that is Peter's taken on a little bit more at his work, but really most of that is growth in my business.
Awesome. And can you want to talk about your business a little bit? And I know, I think we spent a little time on that in the last episode. So yeah, what do you do and how are you growing?
Yeah, so I do monthly bookkeeping for small to medium-sized service-based businesses all remotely. And in the past year, I've added on about 30 clients. So had a lot of growth in that regard. There's a lot of demand for bookkeeping. And I've actually started to take on a few contractors just to do a little bit of work and help me out to be able to continue to grow the business more. Gotcha. And also to not take up too much of my time.
How many hours a week do you work?
I think it's about 30 hours a week right now. I'm trying to keep it between 20 and 30 hours. That's my goal. So upper limit of 30 hours a week on that.
All right. And it sounds like you have like full flexibility, right? Like you're the boss and you're the one hiring the contractor. So as long as you're managing your client throughput and bandwidth, you're as busy as you want to be.
Yeah, pretty much. It's extremely flexible, but there's also deadlines because of bookkeeping and I try and have a tight turnaround on stuff. So that's more managing my own expectations.
Yeah.
Clients are thrilled that they're getting any level of service from a bookkeeper, you know, getting a call back. They're like, this is crazy. But it's more on my end. I have to manage how much time and pressure I'm putting on myself. So
you had a lot of growth in the last year. Where do you see it in like 1 year? Are you thinking, hey, I can grow this, maybe get a couple more contractors? Like what do you want to do in the next year?
Yeah, my goal for the next year is to really have one contractor take on more hours and more workload to kind of take on a few specific clients so that I can continue to onboard folks. Because I do really like working with new businesses and that onboarding stuff as well. But I just need help with the base load of work. So that's my goal.
And then how are you finding clients?
A few accountants in my area have seen my work. And once they see my work, they just send people my way. And then Google business listing as well as word of mouth.
Gotcha. And is it just steadily growing through those couple channels, basically?
Yeah, definitely. I had one accountant I had to tell, cool down a little bit. Need a little break.
Everybody. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I'll ask just like a couple more questions because I like the small business. I think you have something going there, especially like high quality, like good customer service. So people will keep coming back and referring other people to you. So what's like the max number of clients that you think you would want to have?
That's a really tough question because some clients just take an hour or two a month and others, you know, 10 hours a week. So it's hard to put a number on the clients. I think I could probably double in size client base wise and be pretty happy as long as I have the right contractors or employees in place. But I don't know if I want to grow too much beyond that because it is nice to have the personal touch and for all the clients to know me, for me to know what's going on with all the clients. And I think beyond, you know, 65, I would get out of that realm of possibility.
That's a lot to keep up with, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about your spending. So you have a breakdown of like where all the money goes. So you want to go through that for us here?
Yeah. So fixed costs, we spend about 36% on those. Amazingly, that's down from when we met last time. I don't know how that's possible. We were at 40% and now we're at 36%. Nothing has really changed. We're actually spending more on groceries, I think. Yeah, just other costs have gone down or haven't been as much as we anticipated. You know, we still don't spend that much on things like clothing, for example.
Okay. All right. And I was going to say, all right, so the savings and the investment, so that's about 50%. Okay, cool. And you have the guilt-free spending area was 10% and now it's 18%. So what kind of guilt-free spending, how do you guys set it up? Do you have like separate accounts where like you won't be judged? Like I just bought a new e-bike and it's like I had the funds to buy it, but it was like, it's kind of expensive. Like it feels frivolous a little bit. And I'm like,
Totally.
So how do you guys handle
that? That's what it's for.
Right. Yeah. I know.
This has been a challenge for us as well. This year, we actually changed it. So we include vacations in guilt-free spending as well. So we have like a joint vacation line item that's guilt-free spending. But then each month, we each get $650 guilt-free spending. And we track that in this extremely basic budgeting app on our phones that doesn't link to anything. It's separate. It's very manual, but it works. And that way we know how much rollover we have from previous months and how much we have to spend on whatever we want. We have $650 a month. It's rare that we actually spend that much. So we're both kind of slowly accruing a balance through the end of, as the year goes on, it just gets higher and higher.
Yeah.
Peter's been spending a lot of money on CrossFit related stuff this year for guilt-free spending. And he's awesome. Been just totally loving that. He's spending money on supplements and workout stuff, workout clothes. I don't know what else. But he's really loving that. So aside from that and eating out, that's like all he spends money on. So it's working out.
All right. That's awesome. So you have $650 each for guilt-free spending?
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to lobby my wife and our advisor because I only get $350 a month. She only gets $350 a month too. And I'm like, all right. I mean, I think, you know, our balance, we didn't share our balance sheets, but I should be able to spend at least as much as you. So
yeah, this is not right. you know, we kind of followed Ramit's suggestions for like the conscious spending plan. And I think he says 15 to 20% of income. And so we're well below that, even including the vacations. So okay. We started, you know, only like 5%, and we've been slowly working our way up as we're realizing like we're investing 50% of our income every month. We should be able to essentially do whatever we want. Like 650, right. That's way more than we even know what to do with. But that gives the feeling of like we can do whatever we want.
Yeah. So. Very good. Yeah. And I think, you know, my wife just stopped working like 7 months ago. So like we're kind of easing into it. And I can't even remember if I was telling you this before we hit record or not, but like she is a little more nervous about spending. So to go through 6 months or a year, like on the current budget, like makes her feel comfortable and we'll be ahead of where we thought we would be. So then she'll relax a little bit, hopefully. But anyway, this is a good data point. I'm gonna lobby. I should be able to spend a little bit more here. Because I had to bank up that money to buy the e-bike.
For the e-bike.
Yeah, I know. I was like, all right, I'm saving up for the e-bike. Okay, great.
Well, I will say our guilt-free spending does include all our eating out as well.
Okay, gotcha.
So if you have an eating out line item, that might make it a little bit different than ours.
Okay. And I think, I can't remember, we made lump like food and groceries all together. And then the thing is, when we travel, we don't count most of the food because you have to eat...
Yep.
Like every day anyway. So it's just like, okay, we might eat out a little bit more, but we actually tend to stay at Airbnbs and get groceries and cook in a little bit more. So anyway, that's interesting. All right. Anything else around spending or income or anything like that?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, you mentioned supplements just a minute ago, and I actually buy a lot of supplements, and we're going to talk about Ghost Bed, who's a sponsor for today. They have great mattresses and actually have a Ghost Bed Luxe, which I enjoy very much. It's a little softer than the classic, but I want to talk supplements because I take a few for sleeping, and there's one that I've just added back, ashwagandha, and I think it's helping me get more deep sleep. So I'm curious, do you sleep well first?
I sleep super well. I sleep great and I sleep long hours, but I do actually also take ashwagandha as well as some magnesium. Okay. And I think the magnesium particularly, I noticed a real difference more in the quality of my sleep. You know, feeling more rested. I still sleep through the night regardless of what I do, but feel more rested in the morning. That's good.
Yeah. But I take magnesium as well. And I think there's some stat, it's like 50 or 75% of the US population is like deficient in magnesium. So if you take it, it'll basically help you sleep and it's cognitive and blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It seems to work well for me too. But the ashwagandha, so I'll take it about 6 in the evening or so. And I listened to a podcast and they referenced a study where the ashwagandha helps keep your cortisol levels lower in the night. So I think it's working pretty well because I was waking up, you know, at like 2 or 3 in the morning and kind of hard to fall back asleep, but I haven't been doing that. I've just been waking up at like 5:30. So
interesting. Yeah. I'll have to try it in the evening because I've been taking it more morning, midday. So I wonder what just changing it to 6, 7 PM for the ashwagandha would do.
And you're sleeping fine. So, you know, maybe it won't make too much of a difference. Have you always slept really well?
I've always been a really good sleeper. Yeah.
Okay. Noises don't bother you, lights, whatever.
Sometimes falling asleep, lights can bother me quite a bit, but once I'm asleep, doesn't matter.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So I've been dialing in my sleep and I'm always up for checking out supplements. So that is one of the things that I end up spending money on too. So, but it was great when we got the Ghost Bed Lux and like I said, the Classic is a little more firm and we just want it a little bit softer, but both have a cooling technology in there. You can get a 101 night at home sleep trial, and they also have a full range of products like adjustable bases, bedding, pillows, anything you need to sleep better. And you can save 50% with the code MILEHIFI at checkout. Or you can go to ghostbed.com/MILEHIFI. Thank you to Ghostbed. So we talked about the housing situation up front. I think we covered most of it, but we'll dig a little bit deeper. No more renters. It sounds like you guys are pretty happy and you're not going to get more roommates.
Yeah, we're not getting any more roommates. We're very happy. We're not moving anytime soon. But yeah, we're planning on redoing the bathroom. We actually already added a whole house water filter. We have really hard water at our house. So we've been kind of putting that off, but noticing some damage to our appliances and stuff. And so we finally decided, yep, time to do the whole house water filter, which has been super nice. And then just making some changes outside, some new raised garden beds, putting in some blueberries, doing some more long-term maintenance on the garage, that sort of thing.
Okay. And do you have any insight on how long you might want to stay at the house? It sounds like you're making some good improvements, so you may want to stay around there for, you know, several years.
Yeah, we're not entirely sure how long, but I don't know. I'm thinking probably 2 to 5 years we'll be here.
Okay, cool. And moving on, well, I guess, is there anything else about the housing situation to talk about?
Not really. It's still just so great not having a mortgage that it really makes it hard to want to do anything different.
Well, actually, let's dig into that because on paper, depending on where the interest rates are, many times the better return is to have the mortgage at a good interest rate. Let's say, 3.5%, which I don't think the rates are that low these days, but have the mortgage at 3.5% and you're assuming whatever, 8, 9, 10% returns in the stock market. So why did you guys decide to pay off your house?
Peter had this goal. He bought the house when he was 20. And so he had the goal from that time that he wanted to pay the house off by the time he was 30. So that was already a strong thing, pushing towards paying off the house and a real motivation for having the renters. I was more opposed to paying off the house and just wanted to invest that money and, you know, keep the mortgage because the rate was pretty good. However, once we actually paid it off, I was shocked at how much of a internal and psychological change that really had. And I love it. It feels great. And, you know, now we're investing 50% of our income, super low expenses. So I do think it has worked out. It's maybe not the most financially savvy thing to do, but it definitely has given a sense of just safety. And, you know, we have the house, it's stable, we have really low expenses there. So,
okay. And I know several people with paid off mortgages or homes or whatever. They really like it too. I mean, it's obviously a conscious decision for someone to make, but I hear that often where they just feel better, even though they know it's a worse return. Because at some point it's like, you've already done great. And it's like, are you going to try to do even better for like marginal happiness returns? Where this, I mean, it's something I think Elizabeth would really enjoy to have. I mean, we talk about it occasionally, like, okay, if we win the lottery, like that's how the discussion comes up. We don't buy lotto tickets often. Do you guys buy lotto tickets?
No, we don't, but we talk about it too.
Yeah. It's like, oh, if we won, we'd go ahead and pay off the house. But, you know, hopefully it's a big jackpot and it wouldn't even matter. But okay, very good. Next, job update. So we talked about your gig. Things are going well. You are looking at like really lifestyle design and making sure you're doing what you want, when you want, with the people that you want to work with, which is awesome. So if there's anything else to add for that, go for it. Or we could talk about what is going on with Peter.
Yeah, we'll talk about Peter's situation. So he's been running his dad's business for a while, but as of last Thanksgiving, his dad really felt retired. So his dad is maybe there 2 hours a week, but Peter's really taking care of everything else operationally, which was a little bit stressful for a while, but they have hired a really great employee that is there full time to help with some more of the labor work. And so it's gotten a lot less stressful. Still, the challenge with that job is he needs to be there all day, every day, and it's tied to a physical location. There's really nothing that can be done remotely. So that's definitely something that we're thinking about for the long run. How can we, you know, how could he get down to maybe fewer hours or things be a little less reliant on him?
What options have you come up with? That sounds like a tough nut to crack.
We haven't really come up with any options. We keep talking about things, but it just doesn't quite work. You know, he can access email now from anywhere else, whereas before he couldn't even access email anywhere but the physical location. Okay. So things like that have made improvements, but otherwise it's just a little challenging. It is easier for us to schedule vacations though, because now there's at least one other employee that can provide some coverage. Whereas before, going away for a week or two vacation was really challenging. He was getting a lot of calls. So that's come down a little bit.
All right. And how many hours a week is he working?
40 hours a week.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Anything else with his gig?
No, I don't think so.
All right. And we'll get into some personal updates. There's a couple other things to get in here too. And including, you have a question about car stuff too. Awesome. All right. So you have a bullet point here about health stuff. So do you want to tell us what's going on?
Yeah. So we're both pretty healthy overall, but this past spring I had a very large ovarian cyst that really kind of put me out of commission for a while, very painful. It did go away, but that's kind of something that I'm dealing with on an ongoing basis. So it's not really changed any of our plans, but it's definitely made me super thankful for how we've structured things thus far. It was easy for me to balance my workload because I work for myself. It wasn't stressful financially because we do have that emergency fund savings. If anything more needed to happen, we could tap into that. So a little scary, but turned out to be nothing to worry about really. And just very thankful for the situation we're in. And yeah.
Okay. Glad to hear everything's good. Where does healthcare come from for y'all, since it's kind of a both self-employed situation-ish?
Yeah, great question. Thankfully, our health insurance is paid for in full through Peter's work for both of us.
Okay, awesome.
That's a great, great benefit for sure.
Okay, very good. And we'll keep knocking down the list here. So kids.
Yeah, so this is kind of a surprise. We were both thinking we were not going to have kids. Particularly when we got married, neither of us really wanted kids and felt pretty strong about that. And then in the past year, we've kind of both had the feeling that we would want to have kids. So that's kind of in the plans, I think, you know, no rush by any means, but, you know, we're thinking maybe sometime in the next few years for that. So that's kind of changed some things we talked about in the last conversation, because we were thinking, oh, maybe we'll move to Colorado. Colorado. Maybe we'll move out there and do something else. And we've just realized, like, yeah, we want to be close to family here. Peter's job situation, we have some things to figure out there. But in general, it does provide a lot of stability and is really fulfilling. So, yeah, we're trying to figure out what the work-life balance would look like if we have kids in the next few years. I think for me, that really hones in on that goal of probably 20 to 25 hours a week is the most I want to be working. So I'm focused on getting myself set up for that and then figuring out a way where Peter could be home or a little more flexible with his schedule.
Can you expand more? Like, why did you guys change your mind?
This is such an interesting question. I think that people often think of having kids or not having kids as a decision, but I think it is more of a feeling. Like, you either feel like you want to have kids, or if you don't have that feeling, it just never happens and you don't have kids. You know, and sometimes it is a conscious decision, and sometimes people are unable to have kids, which is a, you know, different situation, obviously. But I think for us, we hadn't had the feeling we wanted kids. We super happy with our lives. Like, everything's great. Kids would be in a lot of ways such a burden. But then once we both had the feeling to have kids, then it kind of puts all those other things in perspective. And you go, okay, the bad parts of having kids, we were willing to accept that because we've had this feeling. So.
All right. Cool. Next, we have a note about vacations. And if I remember right, your guilt-free spending comes from, or sorry, the vacation funding comes from the guilt-free spending area as well. Did I get that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Yep. All right. So what kind of trips you have coming up?
Well, we went on a vacation to Slovenia in June, which was amazing. If you love mountains and nature and water, Slovenia is an amazing country to go to. I was shocked. And part of this trip was actually funded as a wedding gift from Peter's family. They paid for the flights and for us to go to a Michelin star, you know, whatever restaurant we wanted, best restaurant in the world. So we went to Isha Franco, which is a restaurant in Slovenia. And that's kind of why we went there. So we didn't know really what else we were getting into. But, you know, we went for 2 weeks and such awesome, mountainous, not very populated country, which is just perfect for us. We had an amazing time. But Peter really doesn't like flying or logistics or vacation that much. Vacation for him is more like a vitamin. So it's like, it's good for me. I should do it every once in a while for the cultural experience. Whereas I really like vacation. So I've been doing a little more solo travel, planning some trips with some other people. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay, gotcha. So for Peter, you said he doesn't like vacation too much, which I can appreciate. Like, I like when we're gone for too long, we want to come back. We like our house. We like where we live. We like the normal routine. And he's not a flight person. Are like sort of shorter weekend trips or camping or something like that, do those kind of trips suit him better? Or is there a particular style where he's like, all right, I could do this way more often than, of course, flying across the world, and then there's a language barrier, like that is a little more stressful. You don't know where anything is. You have to like look at a map for everything. So
yeah, and he doesn't like any of those parts.
Makes
the
sense.
Language barrier, the maps, the logistics, the long flights, that sort of thing he doesn't like. So yeah, long weekend vacations, short road trips. And even like you know, we have gone a few times to Colorado or, you know, to other places where we can get a direct flight. It's like a 3-4 hour flight. It's pretty easy. We're staying with friends. It's comfortable. We know what we're getting into. He likes that a lot more. But yeah, the logistics, he's definitely not a fan of. So we're trying to figure out that balance of, you know, I really like to go to other countries, be around other languages, other people, plan bigger trips like that. And so I'm just trying to figure out, okay, how can we do that kind of separately and then also do lots of fun long weekends and stuff like that.
You mentioned the app that you're using called Monarch, and I've heard ads for Monarch, but I've never used it. So can you talk about like how you use it, what it's supposed to do? Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Yeah. So previously we were tracking everything in a spreadsheet. Once a month, we'd go through like line by line, our bank statement and credit card statement and manually add things up and enter them in the spreadsheet, which we got really good reporting, but it took way too much time. And I kind of wanted to redirect the conversation from, instead of just like going over our bank statements each month, to be able to look a little more high level. So the goal with moving to an app was to get that information a little more easily and have more of it be automated. So we moved to Monarch Money, I think it's called. And I would say it's been pretty mixed. The auto categorization is pretty poor. And so, you know, it does bring in everything automatically and it auto adds everything up. But we are spending more time than anticipated going through and saying like, oh, this is for gas, or like our electricity bill every single month, it categorizes it as a subscription, not electricity. And you're doing it every single month. I find that really annoying. Especially as a bookkeeper, this is what I do all day, every day.
Yeah.
So I don't want to do it in the evening that much. So it's been better, but it's been hard to get the reporting we want. And it's been a little frustrating of a transition. So if anyone has any suggestions for awesome budgeting apps, I'd love to hear thoughts on that as well.
All right. That's another question we want to get some feedback for. So are you spending about the same as you did on the spreadsheet? It's just in an app instead of the spreadsheet?
It's probably a little bit less, because instead of having to log into all like the bank and credit card accounts, it is brought in all in one place. But we do have to go through and like recategorize some of the stuff, or at least review every item, which I didn't think we were going to have to do.
Yeah.
So I think we're still saving some time, but it's not as much as I thought it was going to be.
We use a spreadsheet and I'm not super interested in tracking as closely. Elizabeth does. I mean, she's into it. She wants to go through it. It sounds like you're the same. You're like, oh yeah, this is our monthly meeting to go through the expenses. And okay.
And, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Elizabeth and I should get together sometime and go over our monthly budgets.
Yeah, yeah. And then you could like talk about how Peter and I do a bad job and we're just like, do we have to do this again? But
Peter's pretty game to do it. He wouldn't it if I didn't want it done, but he's a game participant. He's good.
Okay. I drag my feet, I'll be honest with you. It's fine, but I'm like, there's a question here. So for me, I'm like, we can continue tracking, especially if we're doing something different, but like, we're kind of locked in. Like, from my opinion, like we had, I don't know, 8 years of data from like our credit card statements. And I'm like, we could take an average, of course, like we moved a couple times, there's higher, lower expenses here and there, maybe a big vacation. But overall, like we could look at historical data because we're older, so we have all this data. At some point, could you relax on it? And as a bookkeeper and someone who's into this stuff, like, could you do it like quarterly or something like that? So it's just like, we're pretty dialed in unless there's some anomaly here and we know we're going to fall within this range. What do you think?
I think we could do it quarterly, but I'm not sure it would be easier because I think we would actually forget what happened. You know, like what was that, whatever transaction, when it's just within the month you remember. So I think in that sense, it's easier. We also have had a few months like October for us consistently is a really expensive month because our property taxes are due. both of our cars get inspected. My car gets registered. Our car insurance is paid for the year. Like, all of those things just happen to fall in October. And so sometimes you do want the up-to-date stuff because October is one of the only months where we might run a little cash flow negative.
Got it.
However, we know that. So, like, in the future, we should just anticipate that a little bit more.
Okay. Well, I was looking for permission to be a little lazier, but I think you said I can't do it.
I don't think you got it.
All right. Okay, cool. So Monarch Money is maybe okay. It could work for some people potentially.
Yeah, it's mediocre.
Okay. And it's funny, I've heard ads for it. And yeah, I mean, they're getting paid to say whatever it is they're saying. So I'm like, I don't know if it's that great, but I think a lot of people end up using spreadsheets because, like, you can create whatever reports you want and there's limitations, but it's at least you know right. what those are coming in.
And I do think Monarch could get better as it, maybe they're going to have better learning involved in there. I think right now, whatever tool is supposedly learning your categorization is not that great, but maybe they're going to improve that in the future. Like, if they change that, it could be amazing in 2 months.
Right.
So who knows?
It seems so simple too, as like a software person. It's like, if it's the same bill coming in from the same place, like I told you like 30 times what it was already. So, okay. Moving on, wrapping up here, you are in the market for a car. So what kind of stuff are you looking for? What kind of questions do you have? And we can crowdsource some ideas here.
Yeah, we really need some crowdsourcing on this one because we are actively stuck on this. So Peter has a 2015 Subaru Impreza right now. It's about at 100,000 miles. It's worth maybe $7,000 private sale. And in the past year, we have had so many repairs on that vehicle. It has been extremely expensive. And it seems like it pretty much needs new brakes every single year, consistently, which really adds up on top of some other maintenance stuff that's coming up. So we're kind of ready for a different car. We would like something that's more reliable. So we're definitely thinking Toyota or Honda are our choices, but need a vehicle that's a hatchback with lots of trunk space because he treats this Subaru Impreza like a truck. So the seats are always down in the back. There's all sorts of stuff in there, bringing it to and from work. So we need a vehicle that has that. The problem is that Toyotas really hold their value. So there's pretty much none for sale that are a few years old. Everything is super old with a lot of miles. You know, we want something maybe with 30, 40,000 miles on it. It's just very hard to find. And they don't depreciate. It doesn't seem like there's really any discount. Actually, we found some that are a year old used, and they're $1,000 more than buying it from the dealer new.
That's funny.
So we're at a little bit of a conundrum because we thought, you know, maybe we'll spend $15,000 to $20,000 on a car. But to get what we're looking for, it seems like we're more in the $28,000 range and maybe buying a new vehicle, which is not something we thought we would be doing. We thought we'd be buying a used vehicle. So we're really wondering, is it okay to buy a new vehicle in our situation? Or should we find something used? And how much do you think is right to spend on a car?
Mm. And I see you have about 20K saved for a car. And you could move some money around and actually, like, if you were buying like a $30,000, yeah, whatever, like the money's there, right?
It would be cash. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, as a person who I've had my 19-year-old truck for like 16, 17 years, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. I've had it for a long time. So I would say I do know of a few people who mentioned, I never thought I would buy a new car because we're in the sort of fire community and we're like, the depreciation is so great, but the economics changed and maybe a new car is a better deal economically overall. And that totally makes sense. Quick clarification. So you said you want it to be a hatchback. Would small SUV fit in, or you want a car which is a hatchback or like a CRV or RAV4 type?
we really want a hatchback. Okay. And boy, when we were in Slovenia, there's so many small hatchbacks in Europe that are perfect that they don't have here. But I think realistically, I mean, Peter has a whole spreadsheet with make, model, cargo space with seats down, miles per gallon, like everything. And it seems like the small crossover vehicles, like a small SUV, might actually be where we need to go. Like the Toyota Corolla Cross is like a very small SUV. Neither of us like big vehicles, so we want to stay away from the true SUV.
Got it. Okay. So crossover, hatchback. Okay. So if people have opinions, let us know, especially the new versus used situation. And yeah, it's tough. I like was overwhelmed. I recently had the opportunity to get a Chevy Volt from my neighbor, and I considered it a lot, but I was like, I don't care that much. And I don't love the car. It's kind of a cool idea, but I'm like, I don't really drive that much. And I got the e-bike. So I was like, the e-bike may serve for a lot of the stuff that I may be just zipping around town a little bit where I don't need to bring my truck, right? Okay. When will you be pulling the trigger on a new car? I mean, it sounds like actively you're like, we would like to get rid of the Impreza, right?
Yeah, we're very actively looking, but I'm not sure exactly what that time horizon will be. We also just have to make a decision whether we're going to buy new or used. So that's the biggest one. And really, how much do we want to spend? We had kind of said $20,000 for the next vehicle. Felt right to both of us. But looking around, I don't think we're going to get the reliability we thought we were. So I think we're open to spending a little bit more, but it feels like a lot because we don't care about cars that much. You know?
I totally understand. Yeah. I mean, I was looking at that Volt and then thinking, hey, I'll maybe sell my truck. So my beat to hell truck with, I think it has like 140,000 miles. I'm pretty sure I can get about $5,000 for it. And I bought it for 12 and I've had it forever. Yeah. So yeah, the cars are, I mean, they're more expensive than they were. And it blows my mind that, yeah, like the average new car prices are what? It's like 40 some odd thousand. It's so much more than what I, you know, bought my last car for, which is price anchored in my head. So yeah, it's a tough one. Do you know what the max is where that you guys would stomach for like buying a new car where you're just like, this is perfect and we love it. And like there's a connection to the car and all that stuff.
I don't know if either of us are ever going to have a connection to the car, but probably 30,000 is the absolute upper limit either of us could really justify, handle,
okay,
tying up in a vehicle.
So I would potentially use that as the anchor point because that maybe that makes the decision for you because like if things are listed at a certain price and unless you catch like end of year rebates, which that is the one tip I'll give you. Like if you do get a new car, particularly, again, grain of salt, I haven't bought a car in a long time, but the last one, we got her CRV, Elizabeth's CRV, on like a rainy day, November 30th at 9 p.m. Like no one was there. They wanted to move the car and we were like, we beat them up on the price. We like had financing or not. We didn't have financing. We're going to write a check. So we're like, we don't need your money.
Right.
So we got a very good deal because it was the end of month. They were trying to move cars off the lot. So that could be potentially helpful in a rainy day. You guys have, it's kind of gray out there sometimes, right? In the winter.
Oh yeah. Last night we went to the grocery store at 6 p.m. and it might as well have been midnight here. So we are fully entering the dark, depressing, rainy, snowy, gray season.
Yeah. And we just, for everyone's reference, we just changed the clocks. So that's one of the other things. So it's dark much, much earlier now. 1 hour earlier than it was just days ago. So, okay, this has been awesome. We went through a lot of stuff and again, really appreciate you sending all the details and stuff like that. And one thing I'd love to, if you were able to pull together the net worth, send that over to me and then I'll be able to maybe include it in the intro or the thumbnail.
Okay, but perfect.
Is there anything that I missed in our conversation that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we made it through everything. And I'd love to hear people's feedback and hear what the community thinks. I'm always very intrigued by that. So
awesome. Very good. Well, it's been a blast catching up. And hopefully, I don't know, maybe in another year, we'll get an update and see what you guys are up to.
Yeah, sounds good. Say hi to Elizabeth and Georgie for me.
All right. I will. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week.